Welcome, fellow travelers. Thank you for joining us today for our workshop on Tradition 9 of A Guide to the 12 Traditions workshop series. ACA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. This workshop is being recorded and the audio will be available at a later date. We kindly ask you to please rename yourself if using your first name only. And the Serenity Prayer, I think we can say that all together, I believe. Nice deep breath. Higher power, grant me the serenity.
Give me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change.
The courage to change the things I can.
And the wisdom
to know the parts. I know not mine.
And with that, I would like to introduce our presenters and tech hosts. Our tech host for today is Dee Dee, who we have renamed as Lily because she's doing all our skits for the name of Lee over the past few months here. And we have Mary Jo from Illinois, Cheryl from Toronto, myself from Pennsylvania. We are your presenters, and we have a pilot group over several months now of Marchin, Michelle, Leslie, Jen. I'm not sure who I've forgotten. Okay, next slide.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. Our agenda today, we will go over the workshop mission and intent of the 12 traditions. Read our suggested commitment to service and go over our workshop guidelines. We'll introduce the tradition and present the skit, and then we'll have our discussion, questions, and sharing of our takeaways. And we'll close with the tradition meditation.
Our mission is to provide education and experience through a series of 12 workshops, presentations on how the traditions work to keep meeting safe and recovery oriented by the practicing of the spiritual principles. The intent of the 12 traditions from our Big Red Book, page 489 and 490, the ACA traditions outline fellowship unity, group autonomy, and the ultimate authority of ACA, a loving higher power, as expressed in our group conscience. The ACA traditions frame our leadership style in the language of being a trusted servant. We avoid a style of governance or authority over another. Anonymity coming from love underlines all of the traditions and our group conduct. With the 12 traditions, we sustain ACA groups that allow the ACA solution of reparenting oneself to emerge and thrive. And the suggested commitment to service, myself, Cheryl, and Mary Jo will read to you from page 601 in our Big Red Book. I perform service so that my program will be available for myself, and through those efforts, others may benefit. I will perform service and practice my recovery by, number one, affirming that the true power of our program rests in the membership of the meetings and is expressed through our higher power and through group conscience. Two, confirming that our process is one of inclusion and not exclusion, showing special sensitivity to the viewpoint of the minority in the process of formulating the group conscience so that any decision is reflective of the spirit of the group and not merely the vote of the majority. And three, placing principles before personalities.
Four, keeping myself fit for service by working my recovery as a member of the program. Five, striving to facilitate the sharing of experience, strength, and hope at all levels, meetings, intergroups, regional committees, service boards, and world services. Six, accepting the different forms and levels of service and allowing those around me to each function according to their own abilities.
Next slide. Seven, remaining willing to forgive myself and others for not performing perfectly. 8, being willing to surrender the position in which I serve in the interest of unity and to provide the opportunity for others to serve, to avoid problems of money, property, and prestige, and to avoid losing my own recovery through the use of service to act out of my old behaviors, especially in taking care of others, controlling, rescuing, being a victim, etc. And 9, remembering I am a trusted servant, I do not govern.
Our workshop guidelines. We share in a general way. For our purposes today, we kindly ask everyone to focus on the topic being presented so that we may cover all the material. Please remember to employ principles over personalities, curiosity over criticism, progress, not perfection, service coming from love, and our halt for humility, acceptance, love, and tolerance. Tradition 9, as ACA as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Our spiritual principle is trust. A little bit about our spiritual principle behind the traditions are the spiritual principles that we lacked in our family of origin. Therefore, we develop survival skills and laundry list traits in order to survive. By practicing the 12 steps, we're learning to relate to ourselves, and by practicing the spiritual principles of the traditions, we're learning how to relate to others in healthy ways.
Sorry, trust. From our Big Red Book, pages 532 and 535, ACA is an exception from the normal rules of how to run a business or organization. Other organizations have governing boards, which assert their power onto the rest of the organization. The governing boards put out the directives needed to keep everyone else in line. As a 12-step organization, ACA does not have any such directives because experience shows they don't work for adult children. Too many rules, or any rules, would ruin ACA and its effectiveness in helping adult children. When an inner group or the WSO is asked for direction on a certain matter, these committees typically answer with, "We suggest," or "Our experience shows." There are no directives. No one can tell ACA groups how to run their meetings. There is no authoritative governance in ACA. We must remember that disruptive members are not the norm in ACA. Groups only occasionally encounter such individuals who usually change their behavior or move on from ACA. Our groups have demonstrated maturity, compassion, and assertiveness in handling these situations throughout the years. Many of us arrive at ACA wounded and angry. We hurt, so we want to hurt others. However, no one has the right to harm anyone in ACA. We must avoid our misguided attempts to recreate our dysfunctional family system through the ACA group. Angry or disruptive members are usually acting out their family role, unknowingly reconstructing their dysfunctional family setting. Some of us can relate to this claim. We realized that our disruptive behavior allowed us to blame the group. We could avoid working on ourselves by blaming group members for imagined wrongs and slights. The tolerance we found in ACA allowed many of us to change.
Now we will move into our skit for Tradition 9. We're at a business meeting. The group is talking about creating a safety committee. And then just a reminder that Tradition 9 is ACA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And then we'll start the skit. Cheryl.
Our agenda this month is the organization of a safety committee.
Wait a minute. Our 9th tradition says we ought never be organized.
Yes, but we can create committees directly responsible to this group.
Doesn't the BRB also say something about not creating safety committees?
But our meeting can get so unsafe at times. I think we have to do something. There is so much crosstalk, and I've also been bullied at times. Even our business meetings have become argumentative. Does anyone else feel this way?
Yes, I've had some of the same experiences. I'd hate to be a newcomer showing up here because I might not come back. Shouldn't we be concerned about protecting the safety of our meeting?
I think we all know people have felt unsafe and who left the meeting. I'll just say it again. I think we have to do something, or else for me, it feels like what went on in my family growing up.
This is Drew. I get what you're saying, but can we really just create rules?
I just looked it up in the BRB, and it talks about how a couple of group members can talk to the person who's causing trouble. Can we do something like that?
That could be part of what we come up with. Could we call it a safety resource committee that finds out what information other groups or world services already have?
Oh, okay. This is Drew. I think I get it now. So the committee would be responsible to us by getting information, and our group members would make any final decisions?
I'd like to make a motion that we create a safety resource committee.
And scene. Okay. All right. Now we're going to move into some discussion questions, and we will have a timer that when please raise your hand if you want to respond to the question, and you'll have up to 2 minutes to respond, or and if there's time and if there's more to be said, you'll be called on another time. Okay.
I can do the timing.
Thank you. Okay. All right. The first question is, what do you think ought never be organized means? It's a real basic question. Anybody? ACA as such ought never be organized. Any thoughts? Okay,
Dee Dee. Hi, Dee Dee, ACA. So when I read this, I immediately go to the business or the corporate type of organization where there is a boss, and there's a leader of the organization, and I have to abide by the rules that are already written. And so that's kind of where my mind goes when I read ought never be organized. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Dee Dee. I'm going to call on Arjun next.
Hi, everybody. This is Arjun, adult child. Yeah, in a way, opposite as what we are now mandated to do in the Netherlands, we have to register our IGs, and preferably also all of our meetings. That means there has to be a chair, there has to be a secretary and a treasurer who are registered with those functions at the Chamber of Commerce with the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the law, of course, would like to have those people in that function for several years and not changing constantly to give others the chance to serve the way they see fit for their program, and therewith exchange all the insights of how we could perform service together. And this registration might lead to, we are now the board members, and we should be that for too long time, much more time than would be usual in the 12-step programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Erin?
Yes, thank you. So the part of ought never be organized to me, what speaks to me is the reasons behind in my group or even in my committees that it's not organized is if it was so organized and we as ACAs are going to buck rules, the fact that it's not organized allows everyone to participate in making decisions, to change, to grow, to work together in cooperation. If it was so organized, how would we be able to practice all the skills of the traditions? So that's what I think the beauty of the parts that are not organized are about: change, growth, cooperation, working together with each other in service and love. I pass.
Thanks, Erin. Okay. Actually, this is making me think of something that I studied back in school called self-directed teams. And our meetings are sort of like that. We're self-directed teams that we get together, we figure out how it's going to work, and we're organized in a sense, but within the group, and that we all have to agree with how it's being run. So, thank you. Let's go to the next question. Question two, why is trust the spiritual tradition, or principle of tradition nine? Why do you think that? Anybody? Another question that could be asked to follow with this is, as ACAs, do we generally trust that any rules we create in a group will be used appropriately? Or do we have trust issues in ACA? Erin?
Thanks, Mary Jo. If I bring that back around to the first question of learning how to work together as a group to grow in unity and change, if it allows me to trust that whatever the group decides as a group, even if we make mistakes, that as our traditions tell us, we will learn and grow from those mistakes. We use those as opportunities for growth. So that is how I see trust, like trust that, you know, it will all work out for the good of our growth and our personal recovery, to work together to create whatever structure we need. Pass.
Thanks, Erin. Arjun?
Hi, everybody. Yeah, what was apparent today in our intergroup meeting, we have not enough service members and people who do show up at intergroup are somehow not able, not willing, and don't trust themselves to fulfill the service positions. And that creates circumstances that people may show up at the intergroup for the first time, and then they offer themselves up for a service position. And yeah, finally we have someone for that committee. So yeah, we really do like to give the person that trust, because we trust this person is not for personal gain. In our intergroup meeting, we trust that it is for the recovery for the person inside, him or herself, and for the whole group. But on the other side, we do have a guideline in our service position, the description of the service position, that we would like to see everybody at least a few times at the intergroup meeting before one can take on a service position. But as it is, we don't use that guideline. We give the trust to the person and we trust that it's all right. Yeah. Thank you.
That's a really good point about making sure that somebody who takes on a service role has been around for a little while so that we know them. And I've had experience in meetings throughout the years where somebody, a lot of us have very dominant over responsibility characteristics, and joining the program, I've had experience with people joining the program and suddenly jumping in and wanting to take over because they feel like they're organized enough and so on, but without some recovery behind that, at least we usually say 3 to 6 meetings, depending on which meeting I go to, that are 3 to 6 months rather, of attendance before you take on a service role, so that at least you have some idea of what's really going on. And so on. Thank you. So we're in developing this trust. One of the things we had written was we're now working to find the strength and discernment to be able to stand up for ourselves appropriately without reverting to our laundry list traits too. And that's part of trusting others and not, you know, if we challenge appropriately. And so on. Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the next question. Okay, in this skip, why doesn't the Safety Resource Committee make decisions if they are trusted servants? Why can't they just say this is the way it's going to be? So, what are the pros and cons of not taking these decisions to the group first? Arjun?
Group conscience. More people are present in taking any decision. More people can guard and guide conscience of the group.
Thank you. Another follow-up question to that could be, what is service autonomy? Who has the, how do we discern what service autonomy is? And what does service autonomy mean? What does the term service autonomy mean? Aaron, can you define that for us?
I think in our conversation, Cheryl did a really great definition of that. I don't know if she's able to speak to it now.
Speak service autonomy?
Yes. What does the terminology mean?
For me, I can share my experience with service autonomy is when I think of doing service, I first bring, you know, my higher power into it, and I'm thinking about humility. It's not what I want. I can contribute to the conversation, but I need to show up and really listen to the members and really step out of myself and then try to come to a group conscience or however the decision making is within the group and work towards that goal. And I have to remember humility in the process and trusting the process, because my will is not maybe best for the group in this moment or in this decision. So that's the way I've practiced service autonomy with my service work. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl.
So what I hear when Cheryl explains that is that if I'm on the safety resource committee, then, you know, I act autonomously to serve the group for, you know, what do they need to know? What information do they need? But that it's not about me. It's about giving my work to the group for the group to come together to make the decision.
Thank you. And to the basic question, why doesn't the Safety Resource Committee make decisions that they are the trusted service? Well, as it's been mentioned, I mean, it's a group, we're talking specifically when it comes to meetings and, in any, depending on what the decision is about, that it impacts the whole group and a committee can be formed. But in this case, in the SCIB, what we were talking about was forming a committee that was going to get information, and then they would bring the information back to the group. They weren't formed to make decisions in this particular case. So, Edie? Okay, you put your hand up.
Yeah, I was gonna just say the same, you know, thing you said, because the question says, why doesn't the Safety Resource Committee make decisions for if they are trusted servants? So I think the name of the committee itself, Resource, is basically gathering the resources and bringing it to the fellowship where the group conscience makes the decision. So basically piggybacking right off what you said, Mary Jo. Thank you, Pass.
Thanks, Dee Dee.
Mary Jo, I'm thinking about what if that question were turned around to what would happen if the Safety Resource Committee did make the decisions for the group?
Could be problematic. Arjun?
Yeah. I have been a trusted leader by example all my life already, yet I am from the other laundry list. I'm outspoken, I'm assertive, I'm extrovert, etc. So although I don't mean to, my behavior and my wording can be intimidating to others who are not yet used to dealing with this assertive type of people. And as such, as I am usually a trusted leader by example, it's easy for me to become elected into such a service safety committee. But because I'm assertive and I can intimidate others without realizing, without intending to, those people have to come to me as I am part of that safety committee. And that would be extra intimidating for those people. So if a safety committee cannot make decisions, but always have to gather information and let the decisions be taken by the entire group, then at least part of that type of intimidation, unintentional intimidation, is taken away from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Very helpful. And I'm reminded also in reading this, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. So even if they are the trusted servants, they don't govern and make unilateral decisions on their own, or that's not the implication of how it should work. So,
The other thing, you know, is even with this tradition, how it reflects with some of the other traditions. And if there's this safety committee that's making these decisions, you know, well, where is the minority opinion? And because as ACAs, you know, we tend to want to not want rules, you know, I would see it bringing more chaos back to the group and continuing to make it unsafe.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to the next question. And that is, how can our own controlling behavior as ACAs impact our ability to trust that the group can make effective decisions? So many of us have controlling behavior, or what can be interpreted as controlling behavior, as has been talked about. But also, being able to trust that somebody else is going to do it right. So how can our controlling behavior as ACAs impact our ability to trust that the group can make effective decisions? If we don't trust that there can be effective decisions, can that lead us to getting too rigid about certain things? Arjun?
Yeah. Our meeting outline in SCA with four regular attendees who are there every week, two more who are not there every week. We have a new person, not new to ACA or nor to other 12-step programs. She's new in our meeting, and after her first or second meeting, she already wrote to World Service Meeting Safety Committee about our meeting, that we don't have business meetings, and we there's one person playing the dictator. If a person is going at it like that without conferring with the group, then we all get into stress. We are just a very small group, so it's not that one person. We do make decisions with the three people, three of the four regular attendees who have a lot of experience in service also in other programs. And between the three of us with such a small group, we don't really need a business meeting. With other people present, yes, that would be preferable. So this person asked for a business meeting for her feeling of unsafety, and she got one right away. But still, she went over our heads and wrote, what we see as lies to manipulative to the World Service Safety Committee. And in this regard, World Service Safety Committee was had a very, very well worded answer. Like to thank the Service Safety Committee via this channel also, because it was a good answer, not judging our meeting or any of the attendees, but still guiding that person that felt unsafe, which steps to take. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Didi?
Hi. My controlling behavior can definitely impact my ability to trust others. So I have to constantly remain in recovery, going to meetings and in the literature, and check in with myself, check in with my higher power, because if I don't stay in check with myself and make sure that that huge ego within myself, I can cause problems. I'm doing much better because of the recovery work that I am doing. And it is definitely has impacted my life in the past. However, learning to trust others is definitely as important as learning to trust myself and what I can bring to others as part of my recovery. I hope that made sense. Thanks.
I'll pass. Thank you. This is reminding me of how I had for years. I had people sort of reacting to me in ways that I was surprised about, and that finally somebody said, or we weren't getting enough volunteers to do service roles in the meeting too. Finally, somebody said, you know, I would volunteer, but Mary Jo always looks like somebody's doing something wrong. And so I don't want to be in that position to look, to get that evil eye. And I thought, oh my God, I'm not intentionally doing that. But my face, it was one of those things, like I would walk by a mirror thinking I was smiling and realize I'm not smiling. Because the corners of my mouth naturally turned down. So that was a really good piece of feedback for me, because I didn't realize that I was reacting that way or appearing to react that way. So sometimes it can be that we're not intentionally doing things like that. Other times it can be that, oh, they're doing it wrong and I got to fix it. I got to jump in and I got to crosstalk and tell them to do it right. Well, that's my controlling piece if I'm doing that. That's definitely my childhood, my laundry list traits and all that, or opposites. But being able to welcome new people into service roles and trust that they're going to do okay. And I think it was said earlier, we can make mistakes. We're, you know, but, you know, they're recoverable generally. Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. Hi, thank you, Mary Jo. My experience with controlling behavior impacting, you know, trusting the group can make decisions has been, it's very conflicting inside. So I find that it arrests the growth and the flow of the group. And I have to bring compassion, you know, to myself first, and then the individual dealing with the controlling behavior, because I do prefer to believe they don't know that they have the controlling behavior, or I may not know that I have a controlling behavior. And then, but the impact is that the group doesn't get to grow. They don't have an opportunity possibly to be aware of information with the controlling behavior, because the controlling behavior is deciding everything and doing things. So the flow of growth and progression and new ideas and maybe another way to do things is unfortunately stopped. But it is a challenge sometimes, and I usually have to just sit with it and be like, do I confront, or, you know, do I just let it go, you know, because it's usually judgmentalness or arrogance or self-righteousness that is contributing to the controlling behavior. So it's reflecting on myself and what I have to do and what would be, in my opinion, in that moment, the best way to handle it, so that our group stays healthy. Because that's the ultimate goal, carrying the message, healthy dynamics. That's why I'm here, really, in my meetings. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks. Let's move to the next question. So how does Tradition 9 relate to any of the other traditions? So, Erin.
Just taking what Cheryl just said about, you know, the controlling behavior that can stop the groups from coming together, to grow, to learn that it's okay to participate, to learn cooperation. Tradition one, personal recovery depends on group unity, but group unity depends on personal recovery. So if I'm, you know, working off of my controlling behaviors or my other laundry list characteristics or even laundry list characteristics, then that's going to destroy the cooperation and the trust needed when decisions of that employ the spiritual principles or the principles of tradition nine need to come into play. So I, you know, that's one of the few traditions I see playing into getting tradition nine right, the first tradition and personal recovery and unity of the group.
Thank you. Other traditions? We have tradition two, which is about group conscience, and that directly relates to some things we've talked about, that decisions made by group conscience.
And the minority opinion, because in tradition nine, how it talked about on page 535, you know, hurt people, hurt others. But if that, you know, if we learn to work in cooperation and with the minority opinion, that we are also learning how to come together in trust and support of, you know, the workings of tradition nine.
Thank you. Yeah. Tradition four is also pertinent. Oh, go ahead, Dee Dee.
I was going to focus on tradition two. Was that already mentioned? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but go ahead.
For tradition two, for a group's purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. A loving God is expressed in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. That fits right in with the principle of trust. And so I could see how tradition two plays, you know, a role and how it relates to tradition nine. I know. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee Dee. So tradition four, each group is autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or ACA as a whole. We cooperate with all other 12-step programs. That second sentence is one that when we talked about tradition four back in April, cooperating with other 12-step programs, that's unique to our traditions. But anyway, but that groups are autonomous. So how does that relate to tradition nine?
What about principles over personalities when it comes to, you know, chaos that can come up in groups? You know, how do we stay focused on the principle and not start attacking the personalities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we can generally say that, you know, the traditions, it's interesting how wise they are in terms of how much territory they cover and how they interrelate to each other. I think some of the other traditions strengthen tradition nine, for sure. Okay, let's go ahead, Erin.
No, and my experience is that, you know, as each tradition goes up the steps up the ladder, you know, that they all start intersecting more and more with each other, that there was, you know, definitely like a divine intervention as Bill W. was going through, you know, so many questions in the formation of AA, you know, that led to these traditions being developed for the anonymity, you know, that thread that weaves through all of our traditions.
Pass. Yeah. Thank you. Let's move on to question six, the next one. Okay. How does the spiritual principle of this tradition, trust, help me in my personal recovery and all my relationships? So we're talking about how it works in our meetings, but also earlier on, we talked about how the traditions are not just for the meetings, they're for us and how we learn to interact with other people. So how can this tradition help in our personal recovery and relationships? The principle of trust.
And how does that question flip around that if, you know, in my personal relationships, when I don't have trust, what happens in my relationships? What happens to me?
Yeah. Hi, Dee Dee, if I may just jump in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not only can all these traditions help me in my recovery with others in program, I can utilize and use these same traditions with family members. It's definitely hard for me to learn to trust. But again, it's progress over perfection. And if I can practice trusting the principle of this tradition in recovery with other relationships, then I can also bring that to my personal life and enhance my recovery. Every situation is going to be on an as it happens basis, but I'm aware now. And I think that's a big difference while I'm in recovery. And I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee Dee. Cheryl?
Thank you, Cheryl. Trust in addition to coming to ACA and being in meetings and offering service in my personal recovery and my relationships, I'm able to take what I'm getting recovery-wise with respect to, you know, being a humble servant, having a willingness to be a part of. I've you know, learned listening, you know, real listening skills and cooperating with others. So now when I'm with other people who may not be in program, work relationships, friendships, romantic relationships, I carry those things that I've learned. Being a better listener, cooperating with someone else, being willing to hear what they have to say, and acting humble in my process. But ultimately, the trusting, my higher power to give me the guidance and the strength to practice these principles in all my affairs. I'm not perfect, but it's like, can I, you know, if I'm, you know, wanting to get worried or fearful, it's like that's showing me that my trust is just diminishing. And I have to look to, you know, this spiritual principle to say, trust the process. You know, it's okay. And that really truly helps me with my recovery and all my relationships. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. And yeah, in general, I think, you know, as we learn to trust ourselves through our working our program and doing the next right thing, that trust transfers into all the things that we do in our meetings and outside world. For me, if I trust myself, then I can handle most of what comes at me, because I don't, the things that go on in my meetings, I don't take personally. I don't, I know that it can be worked out. So yeah. Any other thoughts, Erin?
Sure, I do. So when it comes to trust and how not being too organized, which would mean to me, like in relationship with something personal happening, you know, not interjecting my will over it. Like it makes me think of the scenario where this was 6 or 7 years ago when my brother, we were all aware my brother was likely to commit suicide. And so we had a family meeting to talk about what we should do. And, you know, it would have been one thing for me to just interject and say, you know, this is what we need to be doing. But as a family, you know, we were dysfunctional. We never really came together to let each other be heard. And it was more important to me at this such a significant time in our lives that I didn't do that. And that instead I would approach what I thought we needed to do more with the curiosity of what others thought, as opposed to this is what we need to do. Because it was a time that we really needed to come together in unity and cooperation and humility and trust. And so to practice that principle of trust, that was how I went about it and tend to go about it in my recovery, that, you know, trusting that that everybody in my relationships, if I'm committed to that relationship, that they matter, and that the unity of that relationship is so important. I mean, ultimately, we were never going to be able to control whether or not my brother was going to kill himself, and he did. But, you know, it was a way for us to come together and eventually even heal from the situation. So so that's how the use of trust for me worked, as a small, well, big example, I guess. Yeah, yeah. Thank you,
Erin. So bottom line, this is it's not all just about what goes on in a meeting. It's about carrying all of this into our personal lives, learning from things both there and in the meeting, and bringing it all together, and learning that trust is possible. Trust in ourselves, trust in others. Of course, there's also the other side of the coin. If somebody isn't trustworthy, we're not going to blindly trust them, because we want to be trusting, but so there's discernment, but at the same time, we give people a chance and trust them. Trust that they'll do the right thing until they don't. Yeah. And then we take a group conscience. We don't just make a decision ourselves. Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay. Then let's wrap it up. And does anybody have any other thoughts or takeaways on this tradition or any of the other traditions that you want to mention or bring up?
Yeah, Ms. Ryan, on the last question still. The step 10 inventory, as with everything in my behavior, checking my motives is a new way to look at my motives. For example, trust, distrust is present, or that I'm angry, sad, or whatever. In this light, the step 10 is for everything in my behavior, in my feelings, my thoughts, feelings, etc.
Thank you. Yeah, checking our motives, that's good. Yep. Anything else? Okay. Well, let's for the next slide. Thank you for participating in this discussion, Cheryl.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Our resources, you may email us at traditions@acwso.org. If you have any questions, need help with anything related to the traditions, looking for resources, please don't hesitate to reach out to that email. It's not monitored daily, but you will be replied to if you contact us there. Our workshop recordings and slides are on our RED website, adultchildren.org, and follow the website to Tradition Workshops, and then I think you click on, like, you'll see all the workshops, and then our Tradition Workshop will be in there. And then our dates and Zoom information is on our acwso.org website at under events and the calendar for the date. And our workshop does land on the fourth Saturday of every month at noon Eastern time. Our seventh tradition contribution: every ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Your contribution is a critical part of maintaining WSL services and delivering the message to the adult child who still suffers. If you would like to contribute, please go to the RED website, and there will be a button to contribute a seven tradition amount there. And I would like to ask for a volunteer to do our closing with the Tradition 9 meditation.
I can read this.
Thank you.
Okay, I am Buddy, and I am an adult child of an alcoholic. Clothing, Tradition 9 meditation. Higher power, may I remember that ACA and its meeting and service structure are different than my family of origin. May I be patient and avoid reaching for the easiest way out when I am confronted with a difficult situation. Help me and my ACA group ask for help in keeping our meetings safe and recovery oriented. Also, help us celebrate the things that we do right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Buddy.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us today for our Tradition 9 workshop.
Okay. See you next month.
Bye.